American Boat Company versus the USA. Mr. Farber?
May it please the court. In this case, it is undisputed that Appley American Boat and its ultimate owner, taxpayer David Jump, as a result of their participation in the abuse of Son of Boss tax shelter, overstated their basis in 18 towboats by more than 1,000%. They claimed on various returns a total basis of approximately $31 million. The correct basis was $3 million. It is also undisputed that using this inflated basis in his boats, taxpayer David Jump underpaid his income taxes for the years in issue, 1999, I believe, through 2004, by many millions of dollars. Section 6662 of the Internal Revenue Code imposes a mandatory 40% penalty on any underpayment attributable to a gross valuation which includes an overstatement of basis. The only exception is if the taxpayer establishes that his underpayment was attributable to reasonable cause and he acted in good faith.
What's the 40% of?
40% of the underpayment. So if you underpay your taxes by $2 million, you owe a penalty of 40% of $2
million. And in this case, how much was the...
I'm not sure about the total underpayment, but it was probably more than $10 million. So it's a substantial penalty. The district court agreed that the mechanical requirements for the application of the 40% penalty were met in this case when he invalidated the tax shelter. But he determined in a bench opinion that the taxpayer had established reasonable cause for his underpayment. In reaching that determination, the court made two critical errors of law, really errors of omission. The court ignored the entire overwhelming body of law that says that when a taxpayer is basing his reasonable cause defense on the advice of counsel, he has to establish that the provider of that advice is independent and not burdened with a conflict of interest.
So what you really want is a per se rule that if you do that, you have to have a second opinion, right?
If you don't need a second opinion, you just need an opinion from a competent tax advisor who's independent and not burdened with a conflict of interest.
Well, I mean, in the circumstances in which the advisor also proposes this tax shelter, then you need...
Yes.
In your view, you need a second opinion.
Yes, because the first one, as a matter of law, is no good. The court did not make any determination that the promoter, in this case, Edwin Mayer from the defunct Jenkins and Gilchrist law firm, didn't have a conflict of interest, even though the government urged that he did and was disqualified. The court just sidestepped it and said, well, he had been relying on Mr. Mayer, and Mr. Mayer came from a reputable law firm. Those points are legally irrelevant. In order to establish reasonable cause, he has to show that he received independent advice from someone who did not have a conflict of interest. In their brief on appeal, the appellees are essentially conceded the case by not contesting the government's claim that Mr. Mayer was burdened with a conflict of interest. They've made a couple of relevant points. The first one, they claim that he wasn't a promoter under a former provision of the Internal Revenue Code. That is wrong, but irrelevant in any event. He doesn't have to be a promoter to be disqualified. If he has a conflict of interest, he's disqualified. He clearly had a conflict of interest. He designed this tax shelter for Mr. Jump. It was a proprietary tax shelter. Mr. Jump had to sign a confidentiality agreement. He implemented the shelter for Mr. Jump, and he charged Mr. Jump $775,000 fee for access to his tax shelter and for providing him with a legal opinion that more likely than not the shelter would pass muster with the IRS. In addition, he had sold this same shelter to many other clients. So he clearly was a promoter, but regardless of whether he was a promoter per se or not, he obviously had a conflict of interest, and that precluded any reasonable cause defense on this legal opinion that was given to him by Mr. Mayer.
Well, Mr. Farber, what if the taxpayer has no warning of the incompetence of it, other than the fact, as you suggest, there's a conflict just because he's a hired counsel.
Your Honor, our position in this case is not that Mr. Meyer wasn't competent to render tax advice. We don't challenge that he was a competent tax lawyer. That's a necessary element. Your advisor has to be competent, but in addition, he has to be independent.
What case is referring to Judge Kaney's question of a moment ago, Mr. Farber? What case law should direct us to that holding? I mean, the Fifth Circuit's gone the other way, right?
No, it has not, Your Honor. No.
They haven't.
There's no court that's gone the other way.
Well, any court gone this way with this the rule you want us to take?
Well, in the numerous...
Maybe an appropriate way to go.
In the numerous cases we cited in our brief, they all were affirming determinations by lower courts that there wasn't reasonable cause, but all the courts of appeals that we have cited, and we've cited numerous ones, stated the legal standard that we are affirming the court because in order to establish reasonable cause based on the advice of a professional, the advice has to be independent and not from a person burdened with a conflict of interest. So, and then they went on to say that the lower court had properly discounted the advice because it had come from Jenkins and Gilchrist.
And it's implicit in all those holdings.
Well, I think it's necessary. They wouldn't state the standard. Even in the Klamath case where we lost in the district court, the district court stated that it agreed with the government that Mr. Klamath could not rely on advice unless it was from somebody who was independent and not burdened with a conflict of interest. The court there then found that the two law firms that had given an opinion were, in fact, independent. That was not challenged on appeal by the government. The government only raised a procedural challenge, a jurisdictional challenge.
I'm not familiar with the facts of that case, but in that case they found they were independent. Why?
They had not actually structured the transaction. I think the government's claim that they weren't independent was that they were issuing opinions for all these clients, but they weren't actually involved in promoting the shelter. They didn't design or implement it or promote it. They were just a hired gun. So
yeah, the very fact that doesn't the conflict arise just from the very hiring?
Well, it might be, but you don't have to go that far in this case because Mr. Meyer here was the one who had the proprietary rights to this shelter. He's the one who implemented it for the taxpayer, and he's the one who sold it to him for $775,000. So there clearly was a conflict of interest here, and there's no evidence to the contrary. The district court also committed another error. Even if you go put aside whether Mr. Meyer was independent or burdened with a conflict of interest, there are detailed regulations under the reasonable cause provision, which is 6664. And these regulations provide that you cannot rely on written advice as grounds for reasonable cause if, among other things, that advice contains assumptions or representations that the taxpayer knows or has reason to know are unlikely to be true. Now, once again, the district court didn't find to the contrary here. The government urged in the district court that this opinion letter was based on unfounded assumptions and representations, and the district court just said, I know there are statements in there that are not true, but he was relying on the reputation of the law firm. Well, you can't rely on a law firm's reputation for reasonable cause. You can only rely, if you're going on legal advice, it has to be on the specific legal advice, and it has to meet the requirements of the regulation.
What do you make from the fact that the accountants who filed his actual personal tax return didn't raise any issue with
him? The record shows that the accountants were not asked to opine on the legitimacy of this transaction. And in fact, Deloitte & Touche sent out a disclaimer letter saying we were just accepting the pass-through figures from returns from other entities, and we were not asked to, and we don't opine on this. And the law is clear, even in this court's Richardson decision, that the fact that a CPA or other tax professional signs your return does not establish that you have received from that person advice that could constitute reasonable cause. The Deloitte & Touche did not pass on this transaction whatsoever. They just plugged in figures on the individual return that they took from the partnership returns. They didn't even have the 1998 opinion letter that Jenkins and Gilchrist had issued. The same thing is true for the other accounting firm that prepared later returns. They testified that they were never asked to and expressed no opinion about whether this transaction was legitimate. So nobody else gave Mr. Jump any opinion that, in their view, this transaction was legitimate. Had they, we wouldn't be here, because that would have been the type of independent advice which would have established reasonable cause. But there wasn't any in this case. And, in fact, the district judge, in his opinion, acknowledged that Deloitte and Touche had never passed on. And he said, no, they didn't ask him for their opinion. Why should they? They already had an opinion from Jenkin and Gilchrist. So even he admitted that Deloitte and Touche had never provided an opinion about whether this transaction was any good, and the accountants, the other accountants, admitted they hadn't. Turning back to the reg.
Don't turn back any place.
Excuse me?
Look down at your lights.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Mr. Owens.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Anthony Rollins for Appellees, American Boat, and American Milling. What the government is arguing here in this case is for a new standard of law that doesn't exist right now, that reasonable cause should somehow be disregarded in the regulation, disregarded completely if a conflict existed, whether it was not even known or could have been known by the taxpayer at the time. And that's simply not reasonable cause. That's not the reasonable cause standard set forth in the regulation or any of the cases that have interpreted it. The case law has gone, the furthest the cases have gone in the Third Circuit in the neonatology case was to go as far as to say that if a taxpayer knows of a conflict or should have known of a conflict, then they could not rely on the advice of the advisor. The court here specifically found in its finding of fact, after 3 days of testimony, examining hundreds of documents and the credibility of the witnesses, that Mr. Jump was honest. He was an honest man. He was credible, and he believed his testimony, accepted his testimony, that he did not know or have any reason to know that the advice he was receiving from his attorneys was not just proper legal advice. Nothing in the facts supported the finding that what he knew, that he should have known or did know anything else at the time.
Is it based on the sophistication of the client?
No. Mr. Jump was a rather sophisticated taxpayer. He had in years past had an interest charge disk structured for his companies, which in and of itself is a statutory tax shelter, which shelters income from offshore sales. It was created by Congress and blessed over the years, and he knew that an interest charge disk avoided the company's payment of taxes. That was there. He had his estate replanned several years earlier by Mr. Mayer at his previous firm, and knew that what he was doing was reducing his estate tax burden by restructuring a lot of the ownership of his entities through trust. And he understand that there were policy reasons and other reasons for the structures of tax law, so that it was not an overwhelming or surprising idea to Mr. Jump that as part of this restructuring, he could also lower taxable income. There was no reason to believe or that he was receiving anything other than proper advice, because that's what he had received in the past.
From the same firm?
The estate planning work was done by the same firm. The interest charge disk work was not. It was years earlier. The Treasury regulation in question here, 1.6664-4, provides that reliance is a defense to these penalties in a situation where the taxpayer acts reasonably and has acted in good faith. And the district court looked at this facts and circumstance test and determined that Mr. Jump had acted reasonably and that he continued to act in good faith. There was nothing in its finding of fact, which we give great deference to, that showed otherwise. It went on several occasions to explicitly say Mr. Jump had reasonable cause, Mr. Jump had good faith, Mr. Jump had no reason to believe he was receiving anything other than proper legal advice when he approached his law firms. To somehow now come up with a greater standard that Mr. Jump is supposed to have a priori knowledge that his law firm was giving him improper advice at the time, even though this was disclosed to his accountants, who, while they may not have provided formal advice on the transaction, raised no red flags, did not tell him, hold on, go get another opinion, even if they didn't provide one. It went through Deloitte and Touche, who at the time told him, well, they could have structured a similar transaction for him if he had wanted to. That's in the evidence. He then used a regional audit and accounting firm once his bankers allowed him to leave a big four or probably big seven firm at
the
time.
They said that Deloitte and Touche said they could structure the same thing that he ultimately had structured by
Deloitte's deposition, which was presented into evidence at the time. Deloitte testified that they were preparing similar transactions at the time, that they could have provided him that advice if he had asked them for it.
They conveyed that to him.
Correct. Mr. Jump is the principal of all these companies. No red flags were raised for Mr. Jump to think that he was getting anything other than proper legal advice. And there's nothing in the record to support that a clear error by the district court in overturning this decision. This case arose in 1998. It's years earlier than the other cases cited by the government. And the transaction at question at the time, if it was to occur 10 years later, would may have had a different result. But at the time, there was no way for Mr. Jump to have this knowledge that the government somehow wants him to have had at the time to know that he was getting improper advice. If the court has no further questions, I have nothing else to add at this time.
All right. Mr. Farber, your time has expired. You may have 1 minute for rebuttal.
The lawyer was in the business of selling similar tax shelters, but that doesn't make the taxpayer's reliance here reasonable. They did not give him an opinion.
If that's his conversation, his counsel related it. Here's another one that we could have done the same thing.
Well, if they were selling them, then they also would have been a promoter if they had sold it to him. But they did not. They testified that they were not asked to opine as to the specific shelter that he did, and they expressed no opinion.
The question is raising red flags if they said, yeah, we can do that for you.
Well, it's not a matter of raising red flags. He's saying he had reasonable cause. To have reasonable cause, he had to receive advice that what he was doing was okay. They didn't give him that advice. The only advice he got, as even the district court said, that Deloitte didn't give him any advice. The only advice he got was from the promoter of the shelter. And the opinion itself was fraught with misrepresentations, including that he had transferred these short sale positions to American Vote for a business purpose. The evidence was undisputed. There was no purpose. The short sale proceeds were in existence for 3 days, during which they were frozen at Morgan Stanley, so the money was never available. So that was false, and he knew it was false because the opinion came out. He got the opinion long after the transaction had been completed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Farber. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And